Welcome to the A-News Podcast. This is episode 118 for June 7th, 2019. This podcast covers anarchist activity, ideas, and conversations from the previous week on anarchist news. It's designed to be useful to anarchists and the anarcho-curious. Email feedback and constructive criticism to podcast@anarchistnews.org. For more information and fun times, go to the nonsectarian anarchistnews.org.
What's new this week? Choosing Hope from Boston Review, a mainstream interview with Chomsky, who has what I would call, at best, an odd understanding of anarchism. Quote, I've always understood the core principle of anarchism to be the recognition that structures of domination and control are not self-justifying. They carry a burden of proof, and when that cannot be met, as is commonly the case, they should be dismantled, a principle that holds from families to international affairs. These general ideas and their manifold applications should have broad appeal and serve as an impetus to action. Unquote. What anarchist of any contemplation have you ever heard say that domination can be okay if it can justify itself? Justify itself to whom? I guess Chomsky is valuable as someone who has seriously thought about and embraced the ramifications of left anarchism, and so is a warning to the rest of us.
How bomb blasts a century ago launched the Red Scare and a raid against Paterson anarchists from NorthJersey.com. Starting out this week with two mainstream stories. Fun! But this isn't a terrible story, telling some history about the town of Paterson and implying some things about the relationship of that century's immigration to radical politics. Quote, Paterson was not only one of the anarchist capitals of the United States, but of the world, said Fraser Ottinelli, a professor at the University of South Florida and an expert on labor movements. Paterson was recognized as a center of anarchist thought and activity, unquote. And, quote, while the circumstances in 1920 were different, the efforts by national leaders to pass laws making it easier to suppress the anarchist movement and conduct raids to sweep up suspected anarchists and deport them have some striking parallels to today's immigration policies, including the Trump administration's ban on travel from some Muslim countries and the intensifying roundups of illegal immigrants by ICE agents, unquote. The similarities can be overstated, but still.
Anarcho-primitivismo, primitivism or patriarchy. From Rhea. This thread probably got the worst comments this week, which is too bad, but perhaps predictable, when Rhea is so personable, talks about sex, and is, female. Quote, from the secluded intersection of vegan and primitivist, I struggled to submit an unrestrained essay to the impressive and inspiring, anarcho-primitivist journal Wild Resistance that was not offensive to their framing of humans as natural hunters. Then I stumbled on the film Into the Forest and was shocked I'd never heard it mentioned in Ann Prim circles. The book on which the film was based was even more intensely provocative. Sidestepping the contentious vegan-hunter divide, I wrote a review of the film and the book. Their only reply left me first bewildered, then driven to explode the vegan eco-feminist dam. The response was, quote, the sole reason that I don't recommend this book anymore, and it pains me not to because otherwise it's such a fucking good book, is because of the head-scratching incest scene. I so wish she hadn't done that. It was unnecessary, and will remain the reason I don't include the book in my recommendations. Unquote. So the two busiest threads on A-News this week were both about controversial sex. Just wait till those folks read Letters of Insurgents.
Society is walls that cannot be broken. From Anon, a poorly written, jargon-filled, and overly long defense of being antisocial. What I find to appreciate about this is its command to shit or get off the pot, to use the vernacular. In other words, being antisocial in a society that is fucked up is the role of anarchists, and will usually not allow for social validation. I would certainly argue that this is simplistic and overly binary, but there's a point to drawing bold lines sometimes. So, okay. Quote, if you choose anarchy, it's pretty likely you may end up doing things that label you a misfit, a whack, a criminal, a terrorist, or just a really fucked up person. Not saying you ain't fucked up indeed, just a different fucked up than the fucked upness of your detractors. But it gets even worse when doing it as a lone wolf. While we understand that the social appeal to success or fitting in is pressuring heavily upon some of us, we can also comfort ourselves in knowing how this is all externally originated dogma. From the comparison to others around to rooting for visions of prosperity or glamour. To live in the image of the perceived others is alienation of our own selves. Giving it away as if our lives are not our own in the first place. Is this dogma all we know about how we should relate to others? Unquote.
Boundlessness, on Playing Out the Game Without a Reason by Rydra Wrong, from Free Radical Radio. A long-form essay from Rydra. If you're a fan of Milan Kundera, Angela Carter, or Max Stirner's writing, you'll recognize their quotes in this essay.
Wolfie Landstreicher, child molestation apologist from Heresy Distro. This is Heresy Distro's attempt to be relevant, I guess. They took an essay by Wolfie from more than 30 years ago when things were different, add some ill-considered scolding notation and a flamey-as-fuck title, and made it into a pamphlet. Most of the thread schools them, which doesn't mean that they will get it, unfortunately. Many people have noted, and it's hard to disagree, that this is the latest Dr. Bones episode, in this case a group instead of an individual, trying to make a name by attacking someone venerable in the scene. Still find it odd slash off-putting that people were complaining that Heresy didn't contact Wolfie first. Why the hell would anyone wish that conversation on Wolfie? Just rude. I enjoyed the thread, though. Gave me the opportunity to think through some arguments like, what is moralism, and so on. Thanks, A-News.
These women provided illegal abortions before Roe v. Wade. Will activists have to go underground again? From Democracy Now!, aka Liberals Forever. This is the transcript of Amy Goodman interviewing someone who was a member of JANE, still the best example of a successful underground organization since the Underground Railroad. Folks should know about JANE. It's an amazing story and speaks to some amazing possibilities. Not to mention that abortion is probably on the way out, and skills should be learned and practiced by everyone who thinks that sucks. JANE is also an interesting case of what I would call an anarchist project, even though probably none of the people in it were anarchists, which leads to a whole other set of ponderings. Quote, Amy Goodman. Yes, it just said, ask for JANE, and then this woman not named JANE would come to the phone. Laura Kaplan. Right, right. I mean, when I think about that, I think, did everybody in the dorm know that if you got a call for JANE, you get Heather? I don't know, on that floor of the dorm. But she was just doing it ad hoc, on her own, and because she was an outspoken representative of both the student movement and the anti-war movement and the nascent women's movement, she became, and she went around talking at various college campuses, she became the to-contact person. People thought, oh, let's reach out to her to find out, unquote.
The 2018 G20 in Buenos Aires Complete Report from CrimeThink. Am I wrong that CrimeThink is the only anarchist group talking about these big summit protests, or is it just that they're the only ones getting their stories on A-News? Have other anarchists abandoned talking about these things or going to them, or is it just that CrimeThink owns the conversation about them, at least in anarchist circles? Anyway, this post announces this essay for download in three languages and reports on multiple days of demonstrations, state responses, and follow-up interviews. Quote, the police were conspicuously reserved during the demonstration, though present en masse in the background. An armada in battle formation had taken position in the streets behind the Congress, generals giving each other military salutes in front of the troops. There was apparently a trained special unit of several hundred who were qualified for civil war. This unit had few similarities with European riot police and did not come originally from Buenos Aires. Rather, it was an elite unit of the National Police, which one can imagine without hyperbole as armed anti-guerrilla fighters, unquote.
A movement at the crossroads, the future of American anarchism, from It's Going Down. What, there has to be one of these every week? Movement, 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 subculture bad, movement, movement.
Goodbye Cascadia, a retrospective on a political mistake, from C4SS. A defense slash explanation of bioregionalism, a history of the author's experience with Cascadia, the organization, and an acknowledgement that it is nationalist despite being mostly anti-fascist. Quote, that, I suppose, is the best practical summary of Cascadia as a movement. Basically good sorts, just deeply misguided. The simple fact of the matter is that Cascadian sentiment is common among much of the left of the Pacific Northwest. Nationalism is a pervasive enough idea that anything close enough to it gets sucked in and becomes it. Nationalism is the black hole of ideas. We live in such a nationalistic era and place that even the anti-nationalists become nationalists, merely of a different, stranger, and perhaps less dangerous sort, unquote. I'm sure the author would not enjoy me, but this piece, like many stories of political disillusionment, is kind of endearing.
Signal fails from North Shore Counter Info. This is a, or another, cry into the wilderness about security and face-to-face relations, in this case using Signal as the lens to remind people that phones are just phones, that security doesn't come from tech, that human interactions of touch, smell, movement still mean more than Skype, emojis, and the typed word. Quote, so I'm going to stubbornly insist throughout this text that there is no substitute for real-world face-to-face relationships with all the richness and complexity of body language, emotion, and physical context. And they continue to be the most secure way to have a private conversation. So please, let's leave our phones at home, meet up in a street or forest, conspire together, make some music, build some shit, break some shit, and nurture offline living together. I think this is way more important than using Signal correctly. The idea for the zine came about a year ago when I was visiting friends in another city and joked about the ways signal conversations back home turned into train wrecks. The patterns were immediately recognized, and I started to realize that this conversation was happening in a lot of places. Unquote. Yep. This piece includes some examples of how signal fails, in case that's interesting or useful to you.
Revisiting the relevance of Max Stirner to anarcho-communists, 2 years on, from Filler Distro by Maddie Thomas of Morgantown Ultra Left Network. It's almost always kind of sweet when someone revisits something they did and remarks on things they would change. This update and essay indicates that Maddie is one of those people who makes people like communists, which is irritating. Their goals were explicit, their references seemed on point, and as far as I could tell, their interpretation of Stirner was fine. On the other hand, what is the point of calling yourself communist in this day and age if you're going to ameliorate it with Stirner? Does ego dash now become the next meaningless prefix to mark some social connection when the political ones make no genealogical sense? Never mind me, I'll just be muttering in the corner again.
Who is the gender abolitionist? From Filler Distro. The point of this seems to be doing is required, not, or not just, being. Quote, it is not enough for those who refuse the constraints of gender to be not men, or neither woman nor man. Those who go about their lives being systematically recognized as a part of manhood must seek to be anti-men, not just among their fellow radicals, but everywhere they go. This is not a process that can leave any stragglers. Trans men and non-binary people cannot abdicate their practical complicities in the subjugation of women due to a misguided belief that it is only the binary or the binary's lack of inner mobility that is the fundamental problem. Such a relief reeks of all the mistaken judgments that characterize the white person who is racially moderate and believes the simple construction of a black middle class will soothe all the ills of society, unquote. While the equation of those who are not with us as against us is a decent rallying cry, one would think that the weakness of rallying cries has been fully demonstrated. It is philosophically confusing but psychologically predictable that fluid circumstances lead to rigid parameters. Let's move on.
Anarchist History, the Metaphor of the Mainstream, from Libertarian Labyrinth. The ever-interesting Sean Wilbur here prepares for a multi-volume history of anarchy by exploring his metaphors, how they help and how they obscure. Some will impugn this look at the process of writing as navel-gazing, and I hope they feel fully empowered to just not read this. But for those of us who would like to be writing more, paying attention to the process is one way to encourage ourselves, and Sean is a consistent and thoughtful writer and has something to offer in that way, as well as in the stories of past times and people that he is better known for. Quote, I think that there are, however, two fairly significant problems with the narrative of mainstream and countercurrent. First, it involves an association of the essential and the hidden that I have learned, with what I think are good reasons, to mistrust. It is, for example, the association made when critics of anarchism latch onto the worst paragraph in Proudhon's Carnets in order to ward off an engagement with Proudhon's theory, or even anarchist theory, in general, on the grounds that there is a revealed truth in that paragraph that necessarily colors and ultimately negates everything else in the larger body of work. Sometimes, of course, important clues to a body of work are indeed hidden, whether intentionally or otherwise, but we discover these cases by careful analysis, not by granting some broadly occult significance to what may simply be striking anomalies. And the appeal to the hidden is, I think, no more persuasive when it takes the form of an invocation of the unrecorded opinions and priorities of the masses. Unquote.
Audio and video. 2019 Montreal Anarchist Book Fair panel with From Embers, Soulcast, Intersectionnel, and the Rebel Beat. An hour and a half from Soulcast. A rebroadcast from a panel discussion by anarchist podcasters. Topics discussed include anarchist participation in internet alienation, audio security culture, the wonders of compression, and much more. The discussion around security culture was interesting if only to illuminate the stakes panel members see their projects playing for. Podcasts against fascism forever! Also, this is the first episode of Soulcast I've listened to, and within the first 5 seconds, Soul's bizarre Vanilla Ice-sounding intro almost made me shut it off and cry.
Anarchy Radio, an hour. Jay-Z has Dr. Laura Drake on as a guest for the show's first half hour, during which they discuss college courses in conversation, the drastic fall in youthful bike riding, and their shared fear of a post-human future. Although Jay-Z asks his favorite question, what is to be done, he mostly just talks over Laura's answers, which is almost impressive as she is basically yelling into her phone. More of the usual laundry list of tears for the rest of the episode.
Anarchy Bang, episode 23, Second Wave Anarchy. Quote, in this episode we will discuss the ways that anarchy has changed in the past 50 years, how our desire for a different world expresses itself in counterculture, in protest the size of a city, a neighborhood, and a crew rather than a world, and in self-identity rather than mass. This episode will begin a specific framing for this project, Anarchy Bang, to test the limits of what is and is not second wave anarchy. Unquote.
Trouble 20, Inside Out, from Submedia, 35 minutes. This is a Canada-based history of prisons, how they started, the Christian influence on them, Jeremy Bentham and the Panopticon, the system's relation to social control and racism, and so on. Includes brief insights from activists, prisoners, including Sean Swain, yay, music clips, quick cuts, and other ways to keep things interesting for short attention spans. Per usual, the politics are not terrible, but kind of simple. So I guess a decent intro for people who can get more follow-up info from other places. Quote, for those inside, the struggle against prisons is often a struggle for survival. It's a constant fight to preserve whatever dignity you can in a place that's designed to grind you down. For those on the outside, it is a struggle to break through the barriers of institutionalized isolation, whether physical, technical, or bureaucratic. It's a battle to build and maintain relationships with those the state would have you forget, unquote. Write an anarchist prisoner today.
That's the sound of the men working on the chain. Gay, all day long they're saying, my work is so hard, give me water.
Topic of the week, means and ends. Most anarchists accept some level of the principle that ends can never justify the means. Some go the next step and reject that means and ends can be separated. What questions does this raise for you? When have you operated in that way, and when have you done something you regretted in order to get something you wanted? Then what happened? How and when does the principle help us? How does it paralyze us, if it does? Who in your life has tended to express this principle, and what were they trying to get at when they said it? That is, in my life, I've heard it most when someone is trying to control other people's behavior, more than something people say to prod their own imaginations or whatever. For those of you who don't take the opportunity to call into the Anarchy Bang episode that talked about this, here is another chance to get at it. I am talking today with Basin. I'm Aragorn. Go!
All right, so I think the whole idea of means and ends is really authoritarian and very movement-sounding. I feel like if you're a group, this is something you have to think about, but if you're just an individual doing things, then means of ends doesn't really matter. As long as you clearly define what you want the end to be, then the means is just moralism.
So what's an example of what you're talking about insofar as you're talking about individual action?
Okay, so if I want to start some sort of, I don't know, land commune or a land project or whatever you would call it, some might say that the means to get there, you know, getting a regular job and exploiting workers is a bad thing, and that the means don't justify the ends, but there's really nothing else you can do. You know what I mean?
Well, I'm not sure what you mean by there's nothing else you can do. You can join someone else's land project. You can, some people claim that you could squat, you know, a federal land, for instance, somewhere that exists, because if you're going to be an individual, you probably have a very small footprint.
If you want your own, like, liberated territory, I guess, however you want to say, if you want your own piece of land to start your own project and want complete ownership over that land, then you're going to have to go and do things the way that capitalism forces you to do. And some people say that engaging with the system like that isn't the means that justifies the ends of having your own land project, and maybe I could eventually open up a commune or something like that.
Well, I think that when people talk about the means and ends conversation, what they're trying to get at is sort of like, what are you willing to do in lieu of success? So in other words, like, you know, this conversation is most classically formed in the context of, like, the revolution. And so the question would be, as anarchists, and, you know, if we were, like, in the Spanish revolutionary moment, would we be willing to join the government, you know, like the Spanish anarchists did, as a way to participate in what's happening? Or are we against that because, you know, the means don't justify the ends?
No, that makes sense. Like, you know, the whole idea of the good of a group needs to be sacrificed temporarily for something else. But I rarely think in the context of large groups or large movements, because I think those things fail constantly and I try my best not to participate in them. So I really think, like I said earlier, that means and ends is really a discussion only applicable for people and part of large groups and large movements. And it also assumes that there's proper action that you can take, when I think inherently all action is going to have some sort of major negative effect that you're not aware of. Like, for instance, if you wanted to start some sort of tech collective and you wanted to buy a bunch of hardware, then you'd technically be supporting the exploitation of the third world and raping the environment with mining.
Well, that's an interesting example, because, you know, when we're talking about this as sort of like a revolutionary question, you know, everything that we do sounds important and like it's worth doing because, you know, it's so capital I important. But if you're talking about, you know, the life we actually live, most of the time that looks like quiet choices. You know, like the choice of trying to learn something seems like a really different sort of scale than, you know, the revolution. So while, of course, you know, what you say is true in some sort of like intellectual sense, in other words, like we can attribute that any activity in capitalism that involves, you know, buying and selling, of course, has the same burden as the rest of capitalism. It's so much something that we do every day. In other words, how often do we have a means and ends conversation about like living your life? Because if we did, then it's not worth doing.
Yeah, it's a good point. But just, it's, I think we have this idea that the larger something scales, then it more important it is for us to discuss this idea of means and ends.
Yeah.
But I think that the group choices are basically a collection of quiet choices, and when it comes to quiet choices, good and bad are basically, you can't distinguish between the two. It seems like as long as you're working under the system of global capitalism, that you can't make a good choice or you can't make a bad choice. There isn't any good or bad at all. I mean, it's really up to what benefits you and the people around you and your own ideas. So does the mean violate your own ideology? Does your mean go against your principles of hurting others or something like that? Then that's a discussion you should have with yourself. But often I think it's difficult to, you know, like...
Sorry, you...
It's a conversation, it's a conversation I feel like we almost can't really have. You know what I... You get where I'm coming from?
Well, this is because you're drawing this hard distinction between individual choice and sort of collective choice.
Like a hard distinction between the two, though?
I think for most people...
Well, what about people banding together into a group changes the nature of choice and changes the concept of, like, the effect their choices have?
Well,
what's a group choice other than the summation of individual choices?
Yeah, I think that most people understand group choices as you having both the power and the capacity to do things that you wouldn't be able to do as an individual. But
Okay, go on. Sorry, my bad.
No. I mean, please go on.
I was just saying, it's like it's something. It's like nothing magical happens when a group of people come together, and you just all that really happens is that it becomes more difficult for a group to be held accountable to its own ideas, rather than an individual to be held accountable for their own ideas, because you have to factor in the ideas of everyone. So it's really about how do you change and act as a group without going against everything you believe in, or sometimes going against everything you believe in is a good thing because it's natural for groups and things to want to adapt to their surroundings.
Well, I'm going to repeat the thing I said a little earlier, which is that the primary difference between individual choices and group choices is that a group has the capacity to do an awful lot more, both terrible and not terrible. And that was the second thing that was on my mind. But I think that point that, like, you have more power to make impact, whether that impact is buying a piece of land or, you know, killing some motherfuckers, you know, both of those options exist with more people in a greater way. You know, in other words, your capacity to make meaningful and perhaps hurtful choices is greater in a group context. And also, the group context allows you to sort of hide behind the group context in doing those things. But again, that does allow people to do things that they wouldn't otherwise do if they were alone.
Well, no, the implication of this question is that you can make good choices, which I don't think you can at all. I think it doesn't matter if you're a group or a person or whatever, you can't make good or bad choices. Maybe like in the context of certain moral frameworks, you can, like under Marxism, I guess it would be a bad choice to be a bad boss, but there really is no good or bad choices. And this question doesn't make much, it's more about, to me, means and ends is more about being accountable to your ideology, because it's kind of hard to say, oh, you're a group now, so now we have some sort of responsibility to not be a bunch of pieces of garbage, but by what moral framework are we not being pieces of garbage?
Well, you know, again, we're talking about this in the context of transforming society, and so oftentimes this conversation is about effectiveness. And so really what we're talking about is, are you willing to be less effective so that you don't hurt people, as an example.
So this assumes that we can bring positive change in society, this question?
It assumes that we're trying.
It assumes that we're trying, okay. I think, well, I guess you can consider me a bit of a pessimist in this regard, but I don't think that's possible. I think the best you can honestly do is just follow your self-interest, and often that involves radical action, and sometimes it really doesn't. So I think no matter what you do, in terms of like a group trying to accomplish some positive change, I don't think that you can measure a net positive change in the world whatsoever. And I think that those kind of calculations are weird, and I don't think they make much sense, personally.
Well, but you have to slow down and shrink this down, because most people don't think that this question, means and ends, is about changing the world necessarily, but doing what it is that you can do. In other words, in the scale in which you can. And so in the context of talking about revolutionary social change, most projects sort of, you know, then comma, our change is going to be about, let's say, trans issues in the, you know, greater New York region. And so to reframe this in the specific context in which you and your group, or even you and yourself, are doing, you know, is relevant. And part of the reason why I'm trying to have this conversation in this way is because I had a person who was a mentor to me who was very determined to say that that basically you cannot differentiate these conversations. In other words, your means are your ends was definitely their argument, and that meant that an anarchist had to basically be had to be consistently anarchistic in everything that they did.
Okay, could you speak more about the means being the same thing as ends?
Well, in this context, if your goal is to create an anarchist society, you basically have to be anarchists all along the way. So in other words, okay, like, you know, so you can't do, you know, politics of assassination, for instance. You can't kill your way to an anarchist utopia. That essentially you have to, you know, be consensual. You have to go the hard road the entire way, which of course, you know, sounds exhausting.
It does sound exhausting. I mean, I guess my perspective wouldn't be as valuable on this, because I see anarchy and radical action as more as a way of saving myself and preserving my own soul. Like, if I didn't do this, like, it would be a very awful way to live, just by being, you know, a regular person living in capitalist society. So in terms of having some sort of moral obligation to help people, I think it's an extremely difficult question to answer, because I think it's very hard to gauge the outcome of the actions we make, like how they affect the regular world. Because in the moment, even if an action seems perfectly moral, things can spiral out and, you know, make the world worse, essentially. So I guess really it would be all about clearly defining what you want to be done and making sure you do everything you can to align with that idea. I mean, it's honestly, it's a very, very, very difficult thing to do. And I'd say it's impossible if your goal is to make positive, like, radical change. I'd say that's impossible.
You know, of course, most people confronted with this set of dilemmas, they tend to not make this as deeply existential of a question, and instead answer it in the context of, like, what are you capable of doing? And you know, when choices come, what experience can you draw on, or, you know, even if it's borrowed experience, to make the best decision possible in the particular moments that you make them? You know, again,
I don't know if you can make the best choices.
What do you mean?
I really don't, because, like, when you're with you said you took the CNT, for instance, like, when, like, the fascists were all, and they didn't know what to do, so they just, like, went to the state, and they got completely clapped. Like, in turn, like, you can't predict those things at all. And it assumes that somehow you can win, and I don't think you can.
Well,
and I think when it comes to making quote positive change in society, I just think it's a very long, deliberate loss.
But the reason why the CNT and the Spanish Civil War in general is a good example is because it is, you can imagine victory on the side of the militias and against the state or really the military incursion that was happening at the time. In other words, a military incursion can have winners and losers. I mean, maybe it doesn't often, but in general it does. And so by framing this question in the context of, like, that set of decisions, you know, you have a lot more flexibility. But of course, in the life that we live today, we don't get to have things with such clear lines. So I would agree with you that in today's world, that seems like a harder choice. It's one of the reasons why people reframe this as an activist question and talk about campaigns and the rest. But, you know, there still is this historical example that we can refight. And I think it is possible to imagine, you know, a CNT or a Spanish Civil War where the anarchists won the battles instead of lost.
I mean, I don't know. To me, a win for the CNT would be, I don't know, their global syndicate where every no more capitalism. That would be a win. But if it was more about sustaining a brilliant moment of human liberty, then I guess it would be a different story. But it honestly, to me, it just circles back to, if you're in some sort of weird activist, positive social change sort of deal, you'd have to have a relatively static mission statement, and you have to make decisions in reference to that mission statement. And if the statement changes at all, everyone in the group has to be in on it, and everyone has to know what's going on and agree with it. So I guess in that way, there can be an instance where you can do something where the means don't justify the ends. Like, if you're out to be a pacifist group and you want to kill someone, but it gets peace, then you gotta look at the mission statement. You know what I mean?
Well, I hear you. Well, and thank you very much for having this conversation with me.
No problem.
This podcast is the effort of many people. This week it was sound edited by Dim. What's New was written by Jackie Chisel and Dim and read by Chisel and Dim. We thank Aragorn and Friend for their help with the topic of the week. Contact us at podcast@anarchistnews.org. To learn more, anarchist and anti-political books, pamphlets, and other material are available at littleblackheart.com. For news by and or about anarchists and up-to-the-minute commentary, see you at anews.org and or the Anarchist News IRC chat room, linked on anews.